Okay, that twinge in the shoulder, right? I think almost everyone knows someone or has felt it
Oh,
themselves.
absolutely. Rotator cuff-related shoulder pain, or RCRSP as we call it.
Yeah, RCRSP. And you know, the search for what actually works, it can feel endless.
It really can.
So today we're doing a deep dive into the latest research. We want to figure out, is exercise really the key? And maybe more importantly, like, what kind of exercise actually helps?
Exactly. And we've got some really interesting stuff to look at. First, there's this big multi-arm trial. Really well done.
Okay.
It compares education just on its own versus education plus either motor control exercises or strengthening exercises.
Right, pitting them against each other.
Pretty much. And then we'll broaden out a bit, look at a critical review that kind of steps back and asks some, let's say, tougher questions about exercise therapy for RCRSP in general.
Sounds good. So our mission here is to get into the details, understand the nuances, and pull out some clear evidence-based takeaways for you.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's kick off with that multi-arm trial then. What was the main thing they were trying to figure out?
Well, fundamentally, they wanted to know if you take a good education program, which is pretty standard advice now,
Right.
does adding a specific exercise program on top, whether it's motor control or strengthening, actually lead to, significantly better results for people with RCRSP?
Yeah.
Or is the education maybe enough?
Interesting question. So, how did they actually structure the study? What were the groups?
So, three arms, three groups. Group one just got the education. That was the baseline, kind of. Group two got the same education, but they also did a program of motor control exercises.
Then group three.
Same education again, but they did a strengthening exercise program instead.
Got it. So, education was the common denominator. What did that actually involve for people?
It was pretty comprehensive, actually. Two sessions with a physio. They covered, basic shoulder anatomy, how it works. Some pain science basics, which is really important. Tips for managing pain, modifying activities so you're not flaring it up, that kind of thing.
Practical
Yeah,
stuff.
very practical. And on top of that, they all watched six educational videos.
Oh, okay. What were those about?
Kind of broader health topics relevant to pain, things like understanding persistent pain, stress management, the importance of general physical activity, sleep hygiene, healthy eating, and they could ask questions afterwards too.
That does sound pretty thorough, like a good foundation.
Definitely.
So, what about the exercise groups then? Let's start with the strengthening one. What did their program look like?
That group was focused on building muscle strength. They used pretty high loads based on 90% of their one rep max.
Wow, okay. Heavy
Yeah,
stuff.
relatively heavy. Targeting the main shoulder muscles, rotators, abductors, the ones controlling the scapula, using free weights, resistance tubes, basically one set until they felt fatigued.
Okay, quite intense.
Yeah.
And the motor control group, what was their approach?
Theirs was more about the quality of movement, not so much the heavy load. Six supervised sessions over 12 weeks.
Right.
They'd start trying to find ways to move the arm with less pain symptom modification stuff. Then they work through this, like, six-phase sequence for retraining arm elevation, gradually reducing assistance, adding a little bit of load, but keeping it light, like less than 50% of their max, and eventually moving into more whole-body functional movements.
So less about brute strength, more about coordination and control.
Exactly. And crucially, both of these exercise groups also got all that education we talked about.
Right, same foundation.
And they were told to do their specific exercises at home daily and keep a diary.
Okay, so they tracked adherence. Good. So the big question, what happened? Did adding the motor control or the strengthening actually, boost the results compared to just education?
Well, here's the really interesting part, and kind of the headline finding from this study. Everyone got better. Like, across all three groups, people reported less pain and better function over time, which is great news in itself.
Definitely good news.
But adding either the motor control exercises or the strengthening exercises did not lead to significantly better outcomes compared to the group that just got the education.
Wow, okay. So the extra exercises didn't really add much clinical benefit on top of good education.
Based on their main measures, like the Quick Day and the WRRC scores, no significant difference between the groups over time. There was a slight statistical thing with Quick Days, but when they looked closer, it wasn't considered clinically meaningful.
That is surprising. What about actual strength? Did the strengthening group at least get, measurably stronger?
You'd think so, right? But interestingly, no. The high-load program didn't result in significantly greater strain gains, specifically in shoulder external rotation compared to the other groups.
Oh.
They did see abduction strength, lifting the arm out to the side, improve in all groups. The researchers thought maybe that was just because pain decreased, allowing people to push harder.
Okay, so less pain inhibition, maybe.
Possibly. But yeah, the specific strengthening program didn't seem to create superior strength outcomes in this study.
So the takeaway from this trial seems to be education is really valuable, and maybe the specific type of exercise added on top isn't the magic ingredient we sometimes think it is.
That certainly seems to be what this study suggests, yeah. Everyone improved, which is key, but the specific add-ons didn't separate themselves.
Okay, now let's pivot to the critical review. You said it takes a broader look at exercise for RCRSP.
Exactly. It sort of zooms out and says, okay, guidelines recommend exercise, everyone does it, but how solid is the evidence, really? And what are the mechanisms? It questions some assumptions.
Right. We often just accept exercise is good for this, but this review challenges that a bit.
It does. It points out, for instance, when you compare exercise directly to a placebo or sham treatment.
Yeah.
One high-quality study actually found no significant difference between manual therapy plus exercise versus just sham ultrasound for short-term pain and disability.
No difference. Wow.
Yeah. Now, the review does acknowledge that exercise seems better than doing nothing. Or no exercise at all.
Okay, so it's better than zero intervention.
Probably.
Yeah.
But the effect size is often modest, and the certainty of the evidence isn't always super high.
Mm.
But here's an important piece of context it adds. Exercise often stacks up pretty well against more invasive stuff, like surgery or injections.
Ah, right. So compared to those options.
Yeah. Often there's no clinically important difference in outcomes, which definitely puts exercise in a favorable light compared to riskier or more expensive treatments.
That's a really crucial point for decision making. So not necessarily a miracle cure, but a solid, often equally effective, less invasive option.
Precisely. And it circles back to the finding from that trial we just discussed, Duvet et al.
The multi-arm one.
Right. The review highlights that finding that adding specific exercises to education didn't boost outcomes and suggests it really challenges the idea that everyone with an RCRSP diagnosis absolutely needs a specific exercise program.
So maybe education and general activity advice is enough for some people.
It could be, yeah. The review explores that possibility.
What about combining exercise with manual therapy, like hands-on treatment? That's super common in practice.
It is. And the review looked at recent evidence on this. Most studies suggest there's actually no significant difference in pain or function, short or long term, if you do exercise alone versus exercise plus manual therapy.
Really? So the hands-on bit might not add much extra?
According to most recent evidence, potentially not. There was one trial suggesting a long-term benefit to combining them, but the mechanism isn't clear. Is it the manual therapy itself, or just more therapist time or expectation? We don't really know.
Fascinating. Okay, so if adding specific exercise isn't always necessary and adding manual therapy might not be either, what about the type of exercise if you do prescribe it? Does a review point to an optimal approach?
Nope. That's another key point. The review concludes there's no consistent evidence showing one type, like resistance versus motor control versus just stretching, is definitively superior.
So no gold standard exercise?
Doesn't seem to be.
Ah.
The author suggests clinical decisions about which exercise to use might be better guided by, you know, the individual patient. What do they prefer? What irritates their symptoms? What are their goals?
More about tailoring it to the person.
Exactly. Shared decision making seems key here.
Makes sense. What about the dose, like load, reps, frequency? Is there a magic formula there?
Again, the evidence is surprisingly murky. There's no clear, consistent dose response relationship found across studies.
Hmm.
There was one finding suggesting maybe people with lower fear about their pain, lower kinesiophobia, might benefit more from higher dose resistance exercise.
Okay, interesting psychological link there.
Yeah, and just generally for tendinopathies, not just shoulder, using some external load seems better than body weight alone. But beyond that, specifics are hard to pin down.
What about muscle contraction type? Like eccentric versus concentric? There was a lot of buzz about eccentrics for a while.
There was. But the review points out that eccentric exercise hasn't consistently shown itself to be better than concentric or standard isotonic exercises. Isometric holds might give some immediate pain relief, which is useful.
Mm-hmm.
But again, no single best contraction type emerges from the evidence.
It really sounds like the specifics are less important than we might think. What about supervision? Does someone need to see the therapist, or is home exercise just as good?
Meta-analyses looking at this generally show no difference in outcomes between supervised and unsupervised exercise for RCRSP.
Okay.
However, one trial did find short-term benefits for supervised exercise. The thinking there is it might just be down to better adherence. People stick to it more if someone's checking in.
Right. Accountability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the decision on supervision probably needs to be individualized. Depends on the person's confidence, motivation, access, cost, all those things.
And the big one, pain during exercise. Is it no pain, no gain, or should you avoid it?
Yeah. Always a tricky one. The review suggests that exercising with some pain, what some call painful therapeutic exercise, isn't necessarily bad.
Okay.
It might even be slightly beneficial in the short term, maybe by desensitizing the area or challenging fear avoidance. But caution is needed, especially if someone has high pain catastrophizing, if they tend to worry a lot about their pain.
So it's not a strict rule, more about context and the individual's response.
Exactly. It's about finding a tolerable level of discomfort that settles down afterwards, not pushing into severe pain.
This is really clarifying. It feels like it challenges a lot of dogma.
It does. And the review also touches on what patients think.
Oh, yeah. What do patients say?
Well, generally, patients expect and want exercise as part of their treatment. They value when it's tailored to them, and they feel it helps through improving strength, but also through, like, psychological benefits and general health.
Makes sense. What gets in the way for them? Barriers.
The usual suspects, really. Lack of equipment, uncertainty about how long recovery will take, low motivation, maybe beliefs that exercise isn't right for their specific problem.
And what helps them stick with it?
Clear advice from the clinician, having access to equipment, making the exercise program feel manageable, not too burdensome, and having social support.
Yeah.
Pretty intuitive stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so synthesizing all of this, the trial showing education's power, the review questioning specifics, what are the big actionable takeaways for clinicians listening, maybe working in private practice? How can they apply this tomorrow?
Right, let's distill it down. Based on this deep dive, I think there are five key things for clinicians to really focus on.
Okay, let's hear them.
First, really emphasize the value of education. That multi-arm trial is strong evidence that good education alone can be really effective.
Yeah.
Explain the condition, pain science basics, management strategies, activity modification. It's a powerful, low-cost foundation. Don't underestimate it.
Okay. Number one, double down on education. What's next? Second, personalize exercise prescription using shared decision-making. Since the evidence doesn't support one best exercise type or dose,
right.
Talk to the patient. What do they prefer? What fits their life? What are their goals? What makes them feel better or worse? Treat it like an experiment you run together. Be flexible.
So collaborate and tailor it. Got it. Number three.
Third, focus on functional goals. Pain reduction is obviously important, but remember why the patient is there. What activities do they want to get back to? Work, sport, hobbies. Make sure the exercises, if you use them, actually help build towards those specific functional improvements. Specificity might matter more for function than just general pain relief.
Good point. Link it to their life. Okay, number four.
Fourth, be transparent about supervision. Have an open chat about supervised versus unsupervised exercise. Explain that the evidence suggests outcomes are often similar.
Right.
Empower them to manage their home program. Make sure they understand the exercises, feel confident adjusting them based on symptoms, give them ownership. Empowering the patient. Makes sense. And the fifth takeaway.
Fifth and finally. Explore their experience with pain during exercise. Move away from rigid rules like never push into pain. Instead, gently explore what they're feeling.
Oh.
Ask about it. What kind of pain? How intense does it linger? Use that info collaboratively to adjust the program. Reassure them that some familiar pain, if it settles quickly, isn't necessarily harmful.
Okay, explore pain. Don't just forget it. Those are five really solid, evidence-informed points.
Hopefully practical for clinicians listening.
Definitely. So let's sort of wrap up this deep dive. The big picture seems to be education is incredibly valuable for RCRSP, maybe even the cornerstone.
Seems that way.
And while exercise is also important, adding specific, complex programs on top of good education might not always give the extra bang for the buck we thought it did, at least for general pain and function outcomes.
Yeah, the evidence for the superiority of specific approaches is surprisingly weak.
And there's no single right way to prescribe exercise, no magic type, dose, or contraction. It really comes down to tailoring it.
Absolutely. Personalization, collaboration, shared decision-making, those seem to be the key principles emerging from this evidence.
Okay. So that leaves us with a final thought for you, our listener, to chew on.
Yeah, considering everything we've discussed, how might this evidence shift your approach in practice? Could placing an even greater emphasis on tailored education and truly collaborative exercise selection change how you manage rotator cuff-related shoulder pain?
And what further questions does this raise for you about meeting the unique needs of each individual patient walking through your door with shoulder pain? Something to think about.